Honey, the power's out.
Flashlight's dead. Can't find batteries.
Hey, neighbors. Want to borrow my Star Patrol spotlight?
That flashlight lights up the whole house.
Watch. The Star Patrol can light up the whole neighborhood. It can illuminate up to a half mile away.
A half mile? That's insanely bright.
And the Turbo Boost increases brightness up to 100%.
Whoa, now that's insanely bright.
With 10 illumination modes, the Star Patrol is a flashlight, spotlight, floodlight, emergency light, and more. And with an ultra-fast USB power bank, you can even charge your phone with it. Plus, the Star Patrol is fully rechargeable and backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee.
So how do I get one of these Star Patrols?
Go to GetStarPatrol.com and you'll get it with free Turbo Boost, free shipping, and a money-back guarantee. Again, that's GetStarPatrol.com. GetStarPatrol.com.
Hi guys, hope you're off to a great day, and hopefully wherever you are not experiencing more of the tsunami warnings and advisories that we received over the last 24 hours. It was an interesting experiment in news to see this headline come and go the way it did. If you went to bed early on the East Coast and woke up the next morning a little bit later, you could have missed the entire sort of emergency situation that was taking place in Hawaii and elsewhere with tsunami advisories and warnings because of a massive earthquake that happened off the far eastern peninsula of Russia. And so a lot of concern, a lot of action, evacuations, announcements. But then as we got into the next day, we can see some of that sort of faded away. And hopefully everyone is safe, although definitely on alert as well for anything that is unpredictable. And of course, when you see a big earthquake like that, there's always a question about aftershock. So perhaps the story isn't over, but taking a little bit of a pause, and we haven't seen a tsunami hit Hawaii or hit the coast of the United States, the west coast of the United States, which is a good thing. We don't want to see that. One of the things that I was thinking about, though, as I was up late watching this news, wondering what this story would become, is I was thinking about that word tsunami, because everyone was using the word tsunami. And even just mentioning the word tsunami makes you a little bit nervous, because you only mention it in an emergency situation. And I thought, oh, it's so interesting. We're using this word tsunami, but no one's explaining what tsunami means. You know, what does tsunami mean? What is the origin of that word? And so there's a little backstory to that, which sets us up for our segment today. So tsunami is actually the merging of two Japanese words, tsu, meaning harbor, and nami, meaning wave. And the first use of it, according to one report that I read this morning, was in National Geographic magazine in the late 1800s. And it was in reference to an earthquake wave. Now, we know that a tsunami can happen in other places besides a harbor, but where you might be able to see it more is in an area that has a lot of ships and a lot of people and is populated. So tsunami, harbor wave, yes, doesn't totally explain what a tsunami is, because a tsunami can happen really all over the world, but sort of an interesting backstory there that hopefully makes us feel a little bit smarter. And that's something that I was really thinking about this week related to Smarter News, because one of our main mantras on Smarter News is curiosity over commentary. Have curiosity about what's going on around the world and take a look at these headlines in a different way so that we feel smarter about being informed rather than more aggravated or more at odds with those around us. If we're actually focused on curiosity and information, it puts you instantly at a different posture than if you're prioritizing commentary. So curiosity over commentary is our guiding light. And I was sitting this week one morning, as one does, and I was on Instagram very early, which is a bad habit, I know. And I was scrolling and I was watching all these different videos of things that I wasn't even thinking about, including like a foster dog getting an amazing spa treatment. And listen, it was a really cute video, right? It made me wonder if I was treating our dog as nice as this dog, and gave me some ideas. But it wasn't what I was actually curious about in the moment. And I found myself sort of lulled into this feeling of being curious about things that I'm actually not really that interested in. And I thought that's not the goal of Smarter News. And one of the things that we've tried to do is not just play defense with all the headlines coming at us. Although over the last 6-7 months of the Trump administration, there's been a whole bunch of news. And so a lot of what we've been doing is organizing information and trying to clarify what's happening in a very rapidly moving news environment. And I think there's a value to that. We're going to continue to do that. Quick, concise, nonpartisan information. We want you to be able to come to us for that. But also part of what we're doing is having a curious look at the world around us. And one of the things I would like to do for you, if you would so have it, is I'd like to flag things for you that aren't typically part of the regular news cycle, where I think there's a story brewing. This is sort of in the category of the most interesting things I've read or seen this week. And I want to flag these for you because one of the things I'm constantly watching as a journalist is not just headlines coming at us. I watch for a pattern of information. I watch how similar words or terms or topics are being tackled by different groups. And over the last week, I saw something sort of interesting related to the area of mental health. So similar to, let's say, a cresting wave, to extend that tsunami analogy in a more gentle way, I'm looking at momentum on topics and watching the patterns of information and how they fit together or don't. And especially when I see two very different groups flagging similar stories, I think to myself, okay, there's gathering momentum in this story and I'm interested in this. And that's what I've seen in this topic of mental health. So big picture, when we talk about mental health and mental illness, this is a huge umbrella. And a lot of different terms and conditions and disorders and descriptions can fit underneath this umbrella. We can be talking about depression, or we could be talking about bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. So it's very, very wide. And I just want to recognize that what I'm about to put in front of you isn't exactly the same topic tackled by different groups, but it's a similar approach in asking the question, are we appropriately and accurately tackling this question of mental health in our society? What can we be doing better? What can we learn from in the past? So big picture, let's talk about depression in American society, and let's talk specifically about antidepressants. According to the latest available statistics, more than 1 in 10 Americans, just over 1 in 10 Americans, is on an antidepressant. If you break that down by gender, it starts looking different. Just under 1 in 5 women is on an antidepressant, and just under 1 in 10 men is on an antidepressant. So the statistics for antidepressants go up for women. They also go up as we age. And also importantly, we've seen more antidepressants prescribed at a higher rate through the pandemic. So this is one of the reasons why we'll take a look at this topic, is that there's quite a few Americans that are taking this medication. And there's a question now about its efficacy. Take a listen to FDA Commissioner Dr. Marty Makary.
You know, some estimates have that nearly 1 in 4 middle-aged women are on an antidepressant. Up to 5% of women in pregnancy are on an antidepressant. Now, antidepressants, like SSRIs, can be an effective treatment for depression. But we have to stop and also look at the big picture. We're losing the broader battle of addressing mental health in the United States. And as a matter of fact, in some respects, we're going backwards. From a national standpoint, the more antidepressants we prescribe, the more depression there is. The more insulin we prescribe, the more diabetes there is. The more pain meds we prescribe throughout the entire saga of the opioid epidemic, the more pain there was. I'm not suggesting that these medications or any medications are causative of mass explosions of these diseases from an epidemic standpoint. But we have to start talking about root causes.
So what can we be doing better when it comes to this topic of mental health? Let's look at two different stories that are approaching this in a unique way that are completely underreported in the news. So Dr. Marty Makary was speaking at an FDA panel that was held last week. And the panel was looking at a very specific topic. It was looking at SSRIs. This is a type of antidepressant, very common type of antidepressant medication, and pregnancy. And the potential effect of these medications on pregnancy. I'm going to link to the entire panel, which is about 2 hours long. This is a very interesting topic and a very personal topic. And so trying to characterize it in a short soundbite is probably not the most accurate. I think if you're interested in this, you should listen to it in its entirety. There was a lot of fascinating insight from a myriad of different doctors that both raised the question about taking antidepressants during pregnancy and also supported it for the mother's health. And it was a very rich debate. But in the middle of this, you also heard from doctors who have taken a look at antidepressants and their efficacy for years. And one of the doctors was a woman by the name of Dr. Joanna Moncrief. And she has been talking about the efficacy of antidepressants. So take a listen to what she had to say.
We are repeatedly told that antidepressants are...
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Effective, that they save lives, that transform people's outcomes. But the data on which these claims are based really doesn't support those claims. The fact that these drugs are drugs that cross the blood-brain barrier, as has already been mentioned, and change the normal workings of the brain, and therefore they alter people's normal mental and physical functioning. So inevitably, they will impact people's underlying feelings in one way or another, just as if you have a drink of alcohol or you take a dose of an opiate, you may temporarily forget your underlying worries and concerns. Antidepressants have fairly subtle effects and very varied effects because they come from many different chemical classes, but many of them share the property of causing a state of emotional numbing. This, of course, might reduce the intensity of people's depressive symptoms or anxiety temporarily, but that's a very different situation from the situation in which you're taking a drug that you believe is targeting some underlying abnormality that is correcting your brain in some way. Moreover, the evidence does not seem to suggest that this emotional numbing effect is actually useful because, as you can see in the graph on the right-hand side of my slide, the difference in effects between an antidepressant and a placebo are absolutely minuscule. It's never been possible to identify a group of people who do particularly well on antidepressants.
I found this conversation fascinating, and perhaps you've already heard something like this before, but I had never really heard it actually summarized in this way. Now, Dr. Moncrief has her critics as well. There are those that don't like the way that she has done her research or the conclusions that she has made from the research, because she's very much an advocate of not necessarily using the current medications to treat antidepressants. And obviously, there's some doctors that believe in it, including patients that believe in the efficacy as well. If you listen very carefully to what she's saying, though, she's not saying that there would not be an impact on the patient. It's just this question about whether or not the medications that we are talking about casually in the public is actually a cure or a treatment for an underlying issue for an individual. And that's really where this conversation on mental health seems to be going. Are we actually using the best available treatments? Are we thinking outside the box to appropriately treat people in a variety of different ways that have a variety of different backgrounds that are suffering from a variety of different symptoms? Again, all under this umbrella of mental health. So as I heard this panel and I was listening to it, I hesitated pulling some sound bites for social media because, again, if you pull just a couple of them, you're not really giving the full nuanced conversation. But what I saw in the New Yorker just a few days later,
made me think about pulling these two things together. If you look at what's going on with the MAHA movement, Make America Healthy Again, and you look at what's happening at the FDA and the sort of panel conversations that they're having that are different than quote unquote more traditional medicine conversations, one could argue, well, that's a more right-leaning group and they're doing more right-leaning things. It's more of a conservative libertarian sort of offshoot. And that's a certain political perspective that's now part of the medical community. Well, okay, you can make that argument, but the New Yorker is a very progressive, very liberal publication, and they took a closer look at a particular segment in mental health in their reporter at large column, which is one of the few areas in journalism right now where you can actually do long form reporting and see a journalist follow a story for several months. Now, again, the publication has a reputation for being more progressive. But as a former New Yorker, I still receive it in the mail. I still like looking at it. And also, there's been some really important insights in the New Yorker that have then telegraphed future big stories. So I continue to get the subscription. And this reporter at large article is one of the most interesting things I've read recently. Again, something that you're not going to necessarily see on the front page or necessarily see in your Instagram or TikTok scroll or on YouTube. So the reporter at large segment is entitled In the Magazine Second Life. Online, it's titled this, Mary Had Schizophrenia, Then Suddenly She Didn't. Isn't that interesting? By the way, there's always a difference between the titles that you'll see online versus what you'll see in print. The article in print says this, some kinds of madness may now be suddenly cured. What happens to the newly sane? Rachel Aviv is the journalist who followed this story. So let me give you a quick summary. You have a mother and two daughters. And what the journalist did is follow the path of the two daughters in their relationship with their mother and how their mother, who was very accomplished, fell into a state of, seemed to be psychosis. You know, she was seeing things. She was what was described as delusional. She was doing things like covering parts of the house because she's worried about cameras. This led to the dissolution of her marriage. It led to a very difficult relationship with her daughters. And she struggled for years. Like she keeps on going down this dark hole where it just seems the mental illness is getting worse and worse. Well, eventually one day she collapses in her bathroom and she's taken to the emergency room and doctors say, oh, well, it must be because she stopped taking her antipsychotics, which by the way, weren't really working. And what they did when they looked at her and did an exam, they realized she actually has cancer. So in addition to having this condition, she also has cancer. And they start treating her for the cancer. And as she's getting the treatment for the cancer, her daughters notice that she's losing these symptoms of psychosis. So what is this about? In fact, at the end of the treatment, they call in the hospital psychiatrist to come look at their mother. And the psychiatrist says, why did you call me in here? There's no symptoms of the psychosis. So what is this about? Well, there's a growing body of research in this particular area of mental health with this very specific condition being psychosis in some form, whether we're talking about schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. And there's a question about whether or not in some cases, not all cases, but in some cases, the person could be suffering from an autoimmune disease that's leading to inflammation. And that if the autoimmune treatments can be given to these patients, immunotherapy, a variety of different treatments, that their symptoms can actually be managed, which are not being managed when they're given antipsychotics or other medication. I'm going to read you one paragraph here, and it's talking about a doctor that is one of the, Christopher Bartley is the chief of a unit at the National Institute of Mental Health, which investigates the role of immune dysfunction in mental illness. So listen to this. To find psychiatric patients who might benefit from immunotherapy, researchers have set up centers roughly similar to the one at Columbia University in New York, at Baylor University Medical Center in Texas, King's College London, Uppsala University in Sweden, and the University of Freiburg in Germany, among other places. Some of the best research into the phenomenon has been conducted in Germany, where it's more common for patients in a first episode of psychosis to have lumbar punctures to access their spinal fluid, which can reveal the presence of antibodies. Bartley estimates that between 1 and 5% of people who have been diagnosed with schizophrenia actually have an autoimmune condition. a figure he based on his own lab's research, which has not yet been published, and also on a German study of 1,000 patients, the most extensive study of autoimmune psychosis so far. Here's the quote. Every 1% ends up being almost a million people in the world who should be treated with a different kind of medicine. Fascinating. I mean, the article describes people that, in one case, a woman that was hospitalized in her early 20s and spent more than 20 years in a hospital that starts getting treated for an autoimmune condition and awakes from what doctors say was a 25-year coma and starts behaving, quote unquote, normally. So this sort of expansive thinking about medication and treatment, specifically in mental health, is something that we're seeing in a few different areas and a level of interest from people from different political perspectives. I didn't even know this was happening. You know, what an interesting question to ask now about where this research goes next. Why does this matter? We know in America, when it comes to mental health, and we're looking at the area of antidepressants, we're seeing a huge portion of the population taking these antidepressants. The question is, are these antidepressants working? Are they effective? And is there a better way? Now, a smaller segment of the population may be suffering from more severe mental health conditions like schizophrenia, but the same question can apply. Do we have the best treatments? Are we thinking outside the box? Are there other ways to address people that have been suffering and help them? So two very different news items, again, that aren't getting a lot of attention, that I just thought I would flag for you as some of the most interesting things that I've read and seen in the last several weeks. So I'm curious what you think about this. What do you think about where medicine is moving? One of the doctors on the FDA panel said Americans and the public in general is ready for a deeper conversation about health and what it means to really be healthy and what it means to be treated. And that he was encouraging doctors to kind of move into that space. So I'm curious, do you feel the same way? Or do you feel like the skepticism about traditional medicine is misplaced or perhaps can also be harmful to the people that do feel like it's helped them in their lives, which there are definitely some. I know that personally from friends and family. So what are your thoughts about this? And what do you think about where this is heading? I'm very curious about that and look forward to your thoughts. Again, curiosity over commentary. What are you curious about? What do you see that's really interesting to you? And how can we follow our curiosity rather than being fed an algorithm that tells us what we might be interested in? This is going to be an exercise. I'm curious what you think of this segment. And I look forward to hearing from you. You could always email me, hello@smarternews.com. All right, guys, back to some of the news headlines of the day. Quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Thank you so much for your support. And I'll see you soon. Bye.